I'm Duncan Campbell. I've been an investigative journalist for 50 years with a number of major scoops on defense and intelligence down the years. I also work in the field of computer security and forensic reporting.
Many of our older listeners will remember you, Duncan, from the ABC trial. Can you just sort of sum that up and how did that all finish?
In the 1970s, when I was starting out in journalism, Time Out magazine in London asked me to go as a freelance to interview a former soldier who'd worked at a British spy base in Cyprus. At the time, the tolerance for journalistic investigations into security and intelligence activities in Britain was extremely low, and I and a colleague and the former soldier found ourselves arrested and charged under now discredited and now removed part of the British Official Secrets Act, and in due course put on trial at the Old Bailey for breaching national security. It was not a success. 10 years later, I was making a documentary series from here in Scotland for BBC Scotland. One of the programmes revealed that a secret plan that had been withheld from Parliament to put a British listening, electronic listening satellite into space called Zircon. And again, the reaction was extremely heavy-handed. My magazine, The New Statesman, was raided. My house then in London was raided. And BBC Scotland was raided to try and stop the programme going out. It didn't work. Program went out a year later, and hilariously, about 4 years ago, when they were Science Museum in London, were making a special exhibit to go around the country celebrating 100 years of GCHQ, the British Listening and Spy Agency. A section of the exhibit was reserved for the suppression of my story on Zircon on the BBC in 1987. So it was quite an interesting trajectory from being a spy that they wanted to be put away for 30 years or so to being the subject of their own exhibition as one of the valid critics of what they've been doing in the Science Museum. So I'm very familiar with electronic intelligence. I've also written a book about British civil defence and war planning arrangements in the 1980s, and that book continues amazingly. It's a sort of iconic Cold War book. A lot of people are interested, and new reprints sell at several copies a week, which is quite extraordinary after 30 years.
Yeah, well, the series was called Secret Society. It was one of the things that led to the dismissing of the BBC Director General, Alistair Milne, whose son, Seamus Milne, went on to work for Jeremy Corbyn as his Director of Communications. And the book I think you're referring to is War Plan UK. I'd like to ask you a bit about that because what you were saying there was that in a state of war, Britain would virtually be run by the United States, which I think a lot of people were shocked by. Do you still stand by that? Is that an accurate reflection of the book?
That's not quite accurate. It was part of the war planning in the 1980s that essentially, in the then plans for the reinforcement of NATO, much of the United Kingdom's territory and military assets were effectively a land bridge to move troops from the United States to Europe. And that would have involved controversies as premises were requisitioned and made over for American troops and equipment on staging, and roads were shut down to civilian access to, for example, allow equipment to be moved from big depots near Preston and near to the west of Reading. So moving all that stuff to the east of England would have been a massive disruption. But these were days when it was assumed that the battleground would be across the whole of Central Europe on the Iron Curtain lines. Of course, that barrier no longer exists because the countries concerned, from Poland to Romania, are free and in the European Union.
Now, I've asked you this week to comment, if you don't mind, on the destruction of these at least three, or we don't know, they may still be semi-operative, these early defence warning radars of the Russians. Now, the argument really is from the Russian side that what are these to do with the Ukrainian war? Because they're not to defend against any weapons that the Ukrainians have got, but NATO intercontinental ballistic missiles, Duncan. So what do you make of these reports and the implication?
We're into a very disturbing period in which the fog of war and the uncertainty of what is actually going on in the military in all sides should be a matter of enormous worry and concern, but remarkably isn't, but that's almost something that we foresaw in the 1980s. So the specific thing you're asking me about is the destruction, I think, about 2 weeks ago of two Russian radar facilities, three radars, two facilities is what I've seen on the report. This does not appear to be disinformation. It's backed up by satellite imagery of the damage. It's being reported by Yahoo and elsewhere. And since nobody has issued any statements about this, everybody is speculating, one, that this is an attack by Ukraine, but using Western-supplied assets. It's been suggested that the missiles, the cruise missiles that would have been used, were British-supplied ones called Storm Shadow. But I've also seen suggestions that it was a Portuguese supplying turboprop type of cruise missile. The damage to the Russian stations is clear. I would say it's substantial. And I would suspect, in the case of at least two of the three radars that I've seen, that they're out of action for the time being. Now, the points about what these are defending against and why attacked is very, very curious. However, what is much, much more alarming is when you look at the number of other things that have been happening this week and right up to this morning, and in fact, at this minute. And I find myself for the first time to compare the international patterns of activities to very familiar scenarios of what it would look like if we were building up to nuclear war. The other events that I've noticed are, there's a report in the newspapers today, most of the British newspapers, about patterns of sabotage attacks across Western Europe. One was a fire in the UK for which persons have already been arrested and accused of working for Russia. There's suspicion about a massive fire in Poland and several other incidents of that kind. What's not been noticed, but I've noticed from those who watch the things, is that Russian trawlers have been, deep-level trawlers, have been trawling back and forth across the lines of important cables. And you can, they're allowing their transponders to be visible, so that you could, this can be seen to be done. So you know it's signaling a threat as opposed to an actual attack. No report that those cables have been damaged. There's no question that that's extremely aggressive activity. Another aggressive activity coming from the West has just started. So this week, two, and I think it's now four, of the American Air Force B-52 bombers flew over to the UK. And this morning they took off and they are flying circles with loads of cruise missiles going all the way around the Russian strategic enclave of Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad isn't joined to Russia itself, so they can encircle them. And Kaliningrad is the location where Putin says, whether he's done it in fact or not is open to doubt, but Putin says he has deployed tactical nuclear weapons to, in anticipation of a potential attack. So there is a secret dialogue going on of increasing tension, covert attacks, if this attack on the Russian radars is Ukraine derived, it is hard to explain how it benefits Ukraine. The radars concerned, in my opinion, from the study of the satellite images, are pretty much exactly the same as we have in Britain at Fylingdales in the North York Moor. So it's a large concrete-style block building which contains different types of antenna that can be pointed around, and it will spot missiles or aircraft at long range. I don't agree with some reports that it can look over the horizon. It's not that kind of radar. But it's very much the Russian equivalent of Fylingdales, parked on their boundaries, looking out, looking across the Earth's horizon to see something that's coming. But where it looks, where these radars look, essentially are not looking into the battlefield areas that the Russians have chosen to create in the east of Ukraine. Therefore, it's extremely questionable as to why there would be a military advantage to Ukraine in attacking these sites as opposed to others. They've attacked lots of other Russian radar stations. So you draw back and you say that is unprecedented. That is beyond any doubt a Russian strategic defense asset. And it's, on the face of it, appears to be taken out. The very fact that nobody is saying anything about this, not the Russians, not the Ukraine, not the Americans, is itself rather worrying because the damage is clear. So I'm just finding myself drawn back to, horrifically, to the mid-1980s when we had all these nuclear war scenarios, and then there would be exercises. Some of your listeners may remember in 1982, 40 years ago, there was an exercise called Able Archer at a time when the cruise missiles and Pershing missiles were being deployed to Europe. And we now know that we came awfully close to nuclear war because the Russians misled the Western level of aggression. Looking at the number of apparently unrelated events, there is a covert war building up. How and why the Ukraine attacked these radars, if they did, is a mystery which we may know about in the future, or we may not. But it is quite clear that with trawlers maneuvering over cables, and finally, we are in the time of a massive, biggest ever for three decades, NATO exercise called Steadfast Defender, I think. And again, highly aggressive activities are being very, very loudly conducted, such as helicopter attack from Finland across the Baltic. Now, it was a simulated attack, so the target was another NATO country playing defender. But you don't need to be at Russian military school to figure out that what's being threatened again is Kaliningrad.
We're in this kind of weird interregnum at the moment with a general election and a month or so of no MPs. Isn't this a little bit concerning that we've got a bit of a democratic deficit whilst we've also got this potential escalation going on?
Situation in the United Kingdom with a general election overlapping seems unfortunate, but the difference between having the Conservative government in power and on their way out seems hardly consequential. It's certainly not a part of whatever crisis is going on that anyone's planned. I wouldn't expect to get much of use from parliamentary questions and so on, partly because of lack of confidence, partly because there is a sense that the great game is being played. The stakes have become higher. Governments will not want to say that, even if they know it, even if they understand what they're doing, even if they think they're doing the right thing. What is going on? It affects the whole of Europe, clearly. if Putin goes further, it'll mean commitment of NATO forces, and we'll all be living in our fingernails as to whether we get to see the end of the decade. So that is the scale of the worry that now seems to be escalating in the background. And this is how it's always been feared that things would start. But things have got started and then gone, you know, been okay in the past. But thinking about the events now going on and reaching into the past, probably the best analogy is to the 1980s and to when a very aggressive NATO exercise called Able Archer started, and it was a rehearsal of a major nuclear attack on the Soviet Union to take out their command centers. And the world may in fact have been saved by a spy inside the Soviet Union who realized that the leadership were overreacting to what the West was doing, and the West was not realizing how much risk they were taking. And the word was passed through the intelligence agencies, and I think it's right to say historically the exercise was scaled down precisely because if the Russians really thought it was a run-up to wars apart from an aggressive exercise, that was not what was planned. And the posturing going on here, if in fact NATO countries, Britain, Portugal, whoever, have authorized what we all presume to be a Ukrainian strike on these missiles that are not actually apparently consequential for the fight to free Ukraine territory, and Russian trawlers are out in the Atlantic threatening damage. American bombers have just come to Britain, and yesterday they were flying circles and literally orbiting just, I've just looked at their tracks, and they were orbiting to the east of the Russian territory for a very considerable period. However, the very fact that you can see the tracks using civil society tools rather than secret intelligence satellites means that this is being done secretly in the open, if that's clear.
Yeah. Okay, Duncan. Is there anywhere you would recommend that people can try and follow this stuff? I think we haven't really seen anything about this on the major news channels.
There has been a summary of reports of concerns that isolated incidents across Europe do reflect a pattern of Russian-inspired sabotage. No, otherwise you really have to be plugged into appropriate places on Twitter, but also have enough skill to understand where you are following fact-based, evidence-based discussion and reporting. But I haven't seen a single source aggregate the points that I'm making to you at all.
No. It's shocking, really. And I wonder whether maybe we haven't heard anything really much from the Russians. Surely it's quite likely that over in Moscow, the reason is that they're actually considering the wisdom or otherwise of having a similar attack on Fylingdales or somewhere similar, because they are looking at this not as an attack by Ukraine, but as an attack by NATO.
Well, you're speculating because the Russians have said nothing. They haven't complained about an attack. They haven't, best of my knowledge, issued propaganda denouncing Ukraine or denouncing anyone for doing this, which is certainly of concern. But it's sort of like they are playing war games under the table. You know, if you look down, you can see some of what they're doing. It's intended to be highly visible to the other side. The fact that it's being conducted in this way is hugely dangerous. You suggest that the Russians might respond by an attack on Fylingdales. That would invoke them. It isn't as simple as that. If the attack was indeed coming from Ukraine, war, whatever Putin wants to call it, the Russians will correctly be able to say that these armaments are supplied from the West, and they have more than one occasion said the supply of Western armaments could be treated as military action against Russia by the West. But if they want to do that and believe that, they effectively have to invoke Article 3 of the NATO Treaty and bring about a state of war between NATO and the Russian Federation. Despite the belligerent talk from the idiots who yap on some of the Russian TV channels, the sense is that none of the grown-ups in the Russian administration would want to countenance that. They don't want the motherland blown apart. But while they are doing this in the service of the totalitarian dictator of Russia and his insane ambitions and ideas, they are clearly putting their population and our population at huge risk. And these war game operations that appear to be going on, the low-level insurgency, the very, very explicit threats, and in the case of the radars, the actual attacks, are extremely concerning.
Look, I think it's a bit cheeky to talk about Putin as a dictator. Our own democracy is in a bit of a terrible state with the neoliberal Labour Party calling itself a Labour Party here in our election. And of course, Putin has actually been elected. He's immensely popular in Russia by all accounts.
I'm sorry, I have no time for that. I recognise no parallel between the corruption and decadence of the British politics, and particularly Conservative Party, and the Russian regime under Putin. No, I'm sorry.
How can people follow you? What's the best way to find your work and follow you on Twitter or on social media?
I'm on Twitter at @dcampbell_2qq. Go on the better places, which are smaller, which is Mastodon and Blue Sky. Much better places, we hope that a decent form of Twitter will come about away from Musk's X.
Right, well, that's certainly a good idea, a recommendation. Can you just remind us again of where there is a better version of these kinds of social media?
Join Mastodon, which is a federated server system that provides the same functionality as Twitter. And Blue Sky is identical to Twitter as we knew it. It's just that the millions or billions of people haven't moved over yet, or we would have Twitter as it was once worthwhile.
Duncan Campbell, thanks very much for joining us.
Good night.